Good morning and you're welcome into Galway Talks with John Morley. If you want to get a comment into us, do so straight away to 086 38 33 553. Phone Siobhan or reception on 091 77 00 77 and email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. Now, the issue of immigration has been a clutch issue for the past number of weeks and months, and it's sort of heated up there over the past few days as well due to rules and changes of rules in the UK, because our Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, has talks with the UK Minister were postponed amid tensions over migrants. To discuss this further, I'm joined on the line by Sinn Féin Deputy Mairead Farrell and Fianna Fáil Deputy Éamon O'Caoimh. You're both very welcome onto the programme this morning. And Deputy O'Caoimh, I'll start with you first. What have you made of this unfolding situation since the passing of the Rwanda policy by the UK government last Thursday?
Well, there are two issues, as I understand it. One is obviously the Rwanda policy in Britain, and the other one is a court ruling here that has to be dealt with by the government, that you cannot return people to Britain because Britain's not considered a safe country, because people seeking international protection there are subject to possible deportation to Rwanda. So we have to try to deal with these issues. It's quite complex because of the situation of the open border. We've all fought for the open border. I think there's nobody in the country who thinks that it's either practical or would achieve anything to try to check who comes across the border. So there's just too many ways across the border. And this is a major, major challenge for the government.
Very challenging as well, because we've just got Stormont back up and running, and there's talks then of having a border in the Irish Sea again to deal with migration from the UK mainland over to the island of Ireland. That could cause problems as well, Deputy O'Caoimh.
Well, it could. That's a matter for Britain. They'd have to agree to it. The only possible place you can control the movement of people is at the sea crossings. Because otherwise, as everybody or anybody who goes north frequently realises, it's not possible to have a physical border between the north and the south within this country. Mm.
There are implications to all of this, though, and we had the UK Prime Minister Rishi Sunak boasting that his policy was working because 80% of asylum applicants into Ireland have crossed from Northern Ireland into the Republic.
Well, I don't think that's what he was saying. He was saying, that obviously there is an impact because people are moving out of the UK. I don't think that was the actual object of the exercise. I think what Britain were trying to do was stop people going in to the United Kingdom. But the reality is that it has failed every country to deal with this issue in terms of stopping people coming in. And we see people taking huge risks with their lives to come across the English Channel in very, very small boats. And you've also a lot of people who are smuggling people in, and that's just the reality. And I had a quick look at the pro rata figures. Britain left the EU partly because of immigration, but it hasn't stemmed the tide of immigration into Britain. And if you take pro rata to population, they are getting roughly the same number of people as we're getting proportionate to our population. So it hasn't dealt with the issue which they claimed it would, and this is a very complex issue. I mean, one point I would say, if Europe, America, Russia and China, who are the four big arms producers in the world, spent as much money on development in the third world as they do in arms, we probably would have a much better chance of stemming this issue, because people wouldn't be forced to leave their homelands. Because nobody wants to leave their own country involuntarily if there is a chance of a reasonable way of life in it. So I think that one of the big lessons out of this is you can't stop. If you create a massive problem, which we have, of poverty in Africa and other countries, if we tolerate regimes that are persecuting their own people, it'll be very hard in the modern world to stop people moving.
Okay. We're also joined on the line by Sinn Féin Deputy Mairead Farrell. Deputy Farrell, what have you made of the situation over the past few days since the Rwanda policy was passed by the UK government?
Well, first of all, I actually just want to agree with what Eamon said there at the end, and I think it's a really important point and a point that's often lost in the whole discussion in relation to immigration. Two of the biggest factors for people to have to leave or leave their home countries is issues because of war that, that we do have to recognise the impact that the West has had on that, and also because of climate change, and again, the impact that the West has had on that. So I think that's a really, really important point and something that it doesn't get spoken about often enough. I think in relation to the last number of days, I think it's probably unfortunate that the meeting isn't going ahead today between the Minister for Justice and for whatever, which reason that isn't going ahead. I think that that is probably something that is quite unfortunate, and it is something that probably should have been looked at a bit earlier than kind of looking at it last minute. But it probably does show a bit of a disregard there by the British government in relation to speaking to the Irish government on it. It's obviously something that is that something that the British government itself deals with rather than Stormont. But I do think it's really important that we've seen obviously Stormont up and running over the last number of months, which has been extremely welcome, and it's been kind of hard won to get that back up and running, and it's really important that it does remain up and running. I think a lot of people have been shocked in some senses with the Rwanda policy in its entirety. Obviously, as somebody myself who fully understands the policies or the sometimes the policies of the Tory government and the impacts that it can have on people, it doesn't, I suppose, come as a massive shock to me in that regard. But I do think that we need to be looking seriously at it, and we need to obviously ensure that we have that level of engagement with the British government. And it is unfortunate that they haven't taken a look at that.
Yeah,
like they haven't been willing to have that meeting today.
Yeah, I suppose in terms of the next steps for our government, you're in opposition in Sinn Féin. What do you want to see the government do?
Well, first of all, one of the things that we've said quite clearly is in relation to the Asylum and Migration Pact, that we don't think that the government should sign up for it. Like, it is a mixed bag of different proposals, and we do have the opportunity to opt in or to opt out. And I think the fact that, you know, even just looking at the way Ireland is, so is different in the sense of the fact that we do have, you know, a British border in Ireland, and as Eamon said, a very open border that needs to stay that way. In Ireland, we need obviously, in my view, to have the ability that people that, you know, we elect to Parliament to be able to make the decisions that impact on ourselves. So I think that's first of all very important. I think everybody would be in agreement, but something that we haven't seen up to this point is that we need to make sure that we have actually a well managed system, something that we've actually never had. So it needs to be obviously fair. But it also does need to be very much efficient, which it hasn't been, and it needs to be enforced. So that's something that we can create, that kind of a fair, efficient and enforced system, outside of the remit of Brussels. So I do think that that's important. We have that opportunity that most other countries actually don't have. So that would be a reason why we would feel that we shouldn't opt into the Migration Pact.
Okay. I know that the Cabinet is preparing to examine laws to allow asylum applicants to be returned from Ireland to the UK. Is that something you'd welcome?
To be honest, I don't want to kind of, I need to see the kind of greater detail on it, you know, because obviously at this point we're here now, it's only the Monday morning. It's not something that we have seen greater information on, so I wouldn't like to kind of comment on it.
How would Sinn Féin deal with it
without getting the increase in information on it?
How would Sinn Féin deal with it, or have you discussed it even?
Well, this is what I mean, like, as in, this isn't something that falls within my own remit, so I wouldn't like to comment on something that I haven't seen the entirety of the proposals on. I don't think that's kind of a clever way of doing policy or politics.
Okay. In terms of this whole situation, though, it has gotten very tense over the past number of weeks in terms of protests at centres earmarked for international protection applicants, and even the bomb threat to Minister McEntee's own home as well. It's gone very tense, Deputy Farrell.
Yeah, it has, and to be honest, like what we saw in relation to attacking Gardaí, like, was completely unacceptable, and I completely condemn it. We've seen, obviously a huge amount of frustration as well. And I think one of the things that I feel actually quite strongly about is that for a long period of time, I feel there was this kind of policy or attitude that the less that is said and the less discussion that's had on a local level, that the better it is. But really and truthfully, what we've seen is that isn't the way to deal with it, because all it does is create a vacuum. We've even seen that in Galway, where I had been contacting the department frustratingly for months about a particular property, and the department continuously coming back to me and saying that they didn't know anything about it. And then one week I contacted them, and they said, after having dealt with them for months on that particular property, they came back and asked me what the air code was, only for me to find out that councillors had been informed the previous week. When I then spoke with the department in relation to it, I said, look, I mean, what we need is that there's information out there for people. Like this, you know, that's just a simple thing. Like, you have engagement, and their response was, oh, the council shouldn't have been notified. And then when I said, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to go and speak to people? You know, the best way to talk to people is actually by knocking doors and actually speaking to people, letting them know what the story is, just a common sense type of approach. And they told me the department doesn't do that, and I said very clearly, well, I think the department needs to do that. Like, I think it's really important. And there was an element where, by saying, oh, you know, talking to communities is nearly you know, there's no need for that. It's simply that people, they have no issue in that. But, like, we know that if you don't go out and you actually chat to people about what's going to happen or what's happening in their local area, and also taking a look at areas and being like, right, you know, for example, if there's no... if there's very little health support systems, if there's, you know, different community issues, why not say, right, let's make sure that we have an investment in our local communities. But just having that conversation with people rather than, and I think that's something that was really, you know, it was a really bad idea by the department, not to have that level of engagement, and just to think, well, if we have a hands-off approach, it'll work itself out. Well, we kind of realise now that that simply isn't the way it is.
Back over to you, Deputy O'Keefe. Do you take that point about the need for increased consultation, and also what have you met about the, I suppose, heightening tension on this debate?
Well, I think we need to, first of all, just two things I'd like to make. One, in relation to the meeting today, it's an awful pity that the British side cancelled the meeting. However, I would point out there is a British-Irish Council meeting taking place, and that's between British government ministers and Irish government ministers, and Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach, Minister of Foreign Affairs, will be at that meeting. And I presume this issue will be discussed either as part of the meeting or on the margins of the meeting. And therefore, not all is lost today. Okay. And it might be more for the optics than otherwise that the other meeting was cancelled. But it is absolutely vital. Dialogue is the key here. Dialogue within Ireland and dialogue between Ireland and Britain, and obviously between Ireland and the European Union. Dialogue is the way forward. Now, in relation to what the situation here, my view was and is, 5 years ago I proposed this, that a forum would be set up consisting of the representatives of the relevant government departments, so that's the Department of Integration and the Department of Justice, and, for example, NGOs in this space dealing with immigrants, other NGOs, public representatives. I think that's absolutely vital, particularly local authority representatives. And that we'd get around the table to discuss the reality of the issues and try find a common way forward. That's absolutely vital. And you know, often in that type of a forum, issues that you know can be debated openly. And as long as, as they call them, the Chatham House rules apply, in other words, that you can have an open conversation without it being reported in detail, you can explore new ideas to how we might actually approach this problem. And approach the problem that Moraid was mentioning there, which is very tricky. At what stage should the department inform the decisions? One of the problems there is that they were in negotiation, obviously, with various bodies, and until they've concluded the negotiations, it's difficult to inform the public because there is no decision and the negotiations will be ongoing. On the other hand, the short notice does cause huge problems. But there again, we have people we need to accommodate urgently. And of course, in an ideal world, that's the part of it that should solve.
Yeah.
You wouldn't be behind the curb with people sleeping on the streets before you manage to provide the accommodation. So there's a lot of challenges here, but I think we need to have an inclusive process towards this. And I still would recommend that a forum would be set up, an ongoing forum around the table with the various interests. And I probably haven't mentioned all the different groups that should be on this forum. I found in the past that that kind of an inclusive approach tends to find a common way forward that you won't find when, you know, people aren't around the table together.
Okay. In terms of the protests at the Minister for Integration's house and also the bomb threat at the Minister for Justice house, what have you made of that trend? It's very worrying.
It's very, very worrying. I think one good thing in Ireland is that politicians are approachable and available, irrespective of party, especially if they've not been in any party. All of us hold clinics. We hold them openly. People can just ring your office and get an appointment. We're all approachable. We all go to public events. And I think it is absolutely vital that we can continue to move about without your security or worrying about personal security. That seems to be becoming a challenge. It's very, very, very concerning that anybody would think of a bomb threat at the minister's house, and it's totally unacceptable. Similarly, I think that the type of picket that took place outside Roderick O'Gorman's house is absolutely unacceptable.
Mm.
The idea of masked people turning up outside of your house, it's not fair on the families. And I think one thing that people forget is you're in politics, but your family is not in politics.
Yeah.
And I think that that should be respected. There are plenty of places to protest. There are protests every day outside Leinster House, and we all accept that. That's part of the democratic process. We all are open to receiving delegations at our meet groups at very, very short notice.
Mm.
And I think people should avail of those processes if they have an issue. I've also found out over the years that, you know, to a certain extent, if you're invited in to talk and you refuse that and you only want to protest, I think that shows a weakness in the argument of the protester.
Okay. It is a very difficult time for the Minister for Justice. Do you have confidence in her, Deputy O'Keefe?
Oh, yeah, I have no reason not to have. It is a difficult time. Being Minister of Justice is never easy. But I have confidence in the Minister. I have no reason not to have confidence in the Minister. And I have dealt with the Minister on other issues, and I found her very reasonable.
Yeah.
Good to work with. So, no, I have no reason to have anything but confidence in the Minister.
Yeah, finally to you, Deputy Farrell, do yourselves and Sinn Féin have confidence in the Minister?
No, and we've made that clear over a long period of time. I mean, even just on the back of the the riots over the last few months. And look, to be honest, we've been very clear. We believe that there needs to be a general election. We've said that rather than the rotation in terms of the Taoiseach. But I do obviously want to condemn bomb threats on the Minister's house. Whether I agree or disagree with her politically, which I do disagree with her politically, does not mean that in any way, shape or form. I think that it is acceptable to have bomb threats in her house. And equally, what we saw in relation to Roderick O'Gorman's house, and I do worry that, like, I as somebody who does really believe that protests are important as part of, you know, our democratic process, I think we need to, like, you know, it's really important that we can continue to be able to hold protests, and I'm so concerned, you know, this kind of thing can undermine that. And equally, it's so important that we are accessible to people. As Eamon said, you know, we all hold our clinics, we're out and about as much as possible, because, you know, at the end of the day, we create legislation that impacts on everybody's lives. And if we're not talking to people and all different types of people from different types of backgrounds and different life experiences, well, then we can't, you know, create that legislation that is as representative of society as possible. And that's really crucial. And that's why clinics are so important, and that's why it's so important that we're out and about as much as possible. So, you know, it is obviously a worrying trend in terms of threats against political reps, but, like, what I would also say is that obviously we have local elections coming up, and it's really important that people do feel, you know, empowered to go forward. And if you strongly believe in your own politics, to make sure that you do go forward and to try and be that representative for your own viewpoint.
All right, Deputy Mairead Farrell, Sinn Féin, and Fianna Fáil Deputy Éamon O'Keefe, thank you both for joining us on Galway Talks, and we'll watch closely what's coming out of Cabinet tomorrow as well. But thank you both for joining us on this topic. We have lots of comments coming in this regard. We'll get to them very shortly, just need to check them. And we're back and we're looking at a lovely initiative that's happening in Athenry next.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Drive happy in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, with hundreds of used cars to suit your budget.
You're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley, and I'm joined on the line now by Liam Hanrahan, who's the Director of Services with Galway County Council. Liam, you're welcome onto the programme today, and it's an exciting initiative you're doing there out in Athenry, because I know you're in the process there in Galway County Council of developing a town centre first plan. What's this all about? Just give us the details of it.
Yeah, good morning, John and your listeners. I suppose the town team and the town first plan will look at, you know, the overall town, getting people from local residents, business people, community reps and others to come together and to begin to develop the projects that would be, I suppose, great for the long-term look and feel and livability of Athenry town. So they'll be working with our town regen officer and with our architects and engineers that are part of that regen team. And they'll be identifying these projects and they'll be identifying opportunities that fall in with the National Town Centre policy. And we'll be producing the plan for the town. And out of that, then there'll be opportunities for funding arrangements and there'll be opportunities for capital projects to develop.
Okay.
So we've just gone through this in Gort. We had a great town team established in Gort. They're still very active. They've developed a really good plan and we're beginning to work on those elements of the projects. So if anybody wants to have a look at it in working format, the Gort Town Plan is there, it's on our website and the town team is active.
Okay, so the maximum number of members on a town team is 12. So people will have to put applications in. And what's the sort of deadline and closing date for all of that?
Yeah, so the closing date is the Monday, the 6th of May. We're looking for a core team of 12. If we have a huge amount of interest, significant interest, what we'd probably do is establish a number of subgroups where maybe if people have great ideas or great commitment, but maybe their interest is on a specific issue, we may decide to establish a subgroup and include them in the subgroup. Really, you know, the people that step forward here really do have to work on behalf of their community, not just on their own interest or on the specific their group they're a member of. So, you know, if we have somebody, for example, and I'm just picking this at random from a Tidy Towns group, what we want is them to come not only with that experience, but also to be able to talk about wider issues, wider concerns, and not just say, well, if we have the Athenry Town Tidy Towns sorted under this, I'm happy. It has, they must be able to show and give us experience of wider things that they'd like to be involved in. Now, that's not to say we don't need to establish some sort of a environmental subgroup under this or a Tidy Towns subgroup under this, but there is an opportunity there for somebody who's got a wider wealth of knowledge to get involved in things, whether it's the built heritage, tourism, local economy. We want to get a range of experts from all of the areas, but they need to be just thinking beyond their specific project ideas.
It'll eventually allow the town to be regenerated and improved in targeted ways. And will there be a chance for money to be drawn down while all that is put in place?
Yeah, there will. I mean, whether it's town and village monies or whether it's some of the initiatives like the RRDF or indeed URDF in time to come. Now, that's not to say we're not looking for those funding opportunities at the moment. And we, you know, we have Part 8 plans there for the regen of Bridge of the town centre there a couple of months ago. But what we have found is that where we don't have these larger master plans in place, we're up against towns of similar size from around the country that have taken that initial step. So, you know, Gort now has that plan. the funding will hopefully begin to follow the plan. And the question has been, is asked by government departments, are you doing this? Are you doing your town centre first plan? And if you do have one of those in place, there's a box ticked in terms of showing coordination, showing compatible projects, showing that you're going to get Part A planning, etc. So we're able to move forward on that basis.
Mm. Just someone's text in there that Monday, the 6th of May, is a bank holiday. So is it actually this Friday, or will there be a bit of grace period given?
No, there'll be, it's getting the applications in by then so that we can begin to assess them on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you know? Mm. So there's, you know, you have to have them in by then. It's in by email. So, you know, we'll be able to see what comes in by Monday, the 6th. You know, a lot of community groups do a lot of their work at weekends. So there may be a meeting of a group on Friday to say, let's put forward John or Mary.
Mm.
And somebody from the committee might say, well, I'll send that email over the weekend. You know, so somebody, you know, get an expression of interest form in by email. It's on the website there. It's not very complicated. Mm. And we take it from there. You know, there are changes. You know, if we may find somebody who comes out of the woodwork in 2 or 3 months' time, who we say, do you know what, we really need that person's expertise on board. Somebody might come on board now and then say, well, you know what, after 2 or 3 meetings, they might say, you know what, my particular interest was a particular project and the other stuff doesn't really interest me. I'd rather go back and work on my own particular project. And that's fine too.
So they can get the expression of interest form on your website, that's galwaycountycouncil.ie, and the email address is regeneration.
Galway.ie.
And
regeneration at galwaycoco.ie.
Brilliant. Liam Hanrahan, the Director of Services at Galway County Council, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks.
Thanks very much.
Before I go to my next guest now, I just want to read out some of the comments that are coming in to us on 086 38 33 553, and it's relation to our last topic, which was immigration. We also have poverty here in Ireland, Deputy O'Queeve. Ireland has become very lucrative for migrants coming in, says this listener. Another listener says, with regards to returning people to the UK, we must realise why the UK don't really care, as we, the Irish government, being in the European Union, objected to the UK returning immigrants to France as per a channel agreement. So we have shot ourselves in the foot, it seems. Another listener says to us that passports are the problem. No passport, no entry. People can travel by ferry without passport. Airports and ferries should be checked. We couldn't get into other countries without passports. Another listener says, Minister McEntee was not available to the guards at their GRA meeting. People are very frustrated as overpaid politicians are not representing or listening to them. In fairness to the minister, I know she wasn't there in support of the Garda Commissioner. And another listener says, another comment into us, but we can't read out for legal reasons. So if you want to get your comments in, keep them respectful and do so to 086 38 33 553. Now though, on to my next guest who joins me in studio. I'm joined in studio to discuss his candidacy for the Midlands Northwest constituency in the European Parliament by James Reynolds of the National Party. James, good morning and thanks for joining us.
Good morning, John. It's a pleasure to be here and to be able to speak to your listeners.
Tell me about why you are running for Europe and running for the National Party.
I'm running for the forthcoming European Parliament elections, and because I believe that I'm the only candidate who was best qualified to try and solve the actual depths of crisis that this country is in terms on so many fronts. And you mentioned immigration in relation to agriculture, in relation to the two-speed economy that we have between the corporate Ireland, the GDP Ireland of the multinationals, that's a tax haven that's thriving, versus the Ireland of the coping classes, the Ireland of the people of Galway that have to get up before daybreak because of the green agenda, objecting to the ring road being constructed, and they have to try and pay their mortgages. They're looking at the cost of living crisis. There's a lot of issues out there. Why the National Party? Because the National Party is the only political party, unlike all the rest. We have too much groupthink in this country. All the political parties, and it's not just my view. It's an objective view. Even Michael Ring, former Fine Gael minister from Mayo, said after the resignation of former Taoiseach Leo Varadkar and his replacement by Simon Harris, that Fine Gael had, his words, not mine, had moved too far to the progressive left. And so you have, when you have parties that, like Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, who have moved to the left, along with Sinn Féin and all the rest of it, you have that's what's wrong in this country.
Okay.
You need someone that isn't afraid to speak up and identify the problems. And in relation to immigration, I heard your interview with Deputy O'Keefe and Deputy Farrell earlier.
Yeah.
I have a totally different perspective on that.
What is your perspective on it?
My perspective is that we are the only, people forget that Ireland. Go back to the and Ireland and the UK when they were in the EU back in 1997 when the EU Amsterdam Treaty was signed. We're signatories of the EU Amsterdam Treaty. People are aware that we have a common travel area between the UK and Ireland because of Northern Ireland, whatever, and because, you know, the unique relationship between the two islands and our history, our shared history, and because of that. We never joined Schengen, even though we had joined the single currency. We never joined Schengen. Is a common
travel area
yeah. on continental Europe, where you don't have to carry a passport moving, we'll say, from France to Germany to Italy, Spain, or whatever. We're not part of that. And when Ireland ratified the Amsterdam Treaty with the UK, was then a member, we had, because of the common travel area with the UK, we had opt-outs on relation to policies on freedom, security and justice or home affairs. We had opt-outs on migration. And that were carried over into the Lisbon Treaty. They haven't been exercised. Do you know why they haven't been? Denmark, for example, has exercised. They were added to that protocol, that same protocol in relation to their opt-out in migration.
Yeah.
Denmark, it's a similar population to this country.
And what's it is your point?
My point is, the reason that we're not exercising our opt-out, And the opt-out, it's no use talking about let's have a fast track approach to Britain. The Northern Ireland being used as a back door for migrants coming from the UK because of the Rwanda policy. That's not the solution. The solution is shut down this open door borders policy by exercising and using our opt-out. But we can't do that when we have
international rules that we need to abide for in terms of people that we take in. We're signed up to international treaties on this.
Well, the primary obligations I would suggest is to our own people, because we have 14,000 people, Irish people homeless. We have 4,000 Irish children homeless. A decent, responsible.
So you want a hard shut down the doors at the airports and the ports and everything?
I'm not suggesting that.
What do you want?
We want a sensible, managed immigration policy. But for example, as I said here,
you're talking a lot about the national government that you're running for Europe.
Yes.
The EU Migration Pact. Talk to me about it.
You've made a great point there, John. The pressure coming on the government for what I contend is open borders policy is coming from the EU and coming from the Migration Pact.
Are you going to be an anti-EU candidate?
No, not at all. I'll tell you what I'm anti the EU federalism. But obviously I'm seeking to get elected as an MEP in the European Parliament.
To do what?
To rescind the Migration Pact. Regardless of whether I am elected or not, there will be a huge surge in right-wing MEPs elected from all over Europe, and I want to be part of that, align myself with that grouping. I want to be part of that in the next European Parliament and use that clout to rescind the Migration Pact. Migration Pact that we have to hand over to Brussels, we cede our sovereignty and let them decide our immigration policy. As bad as it is now, would make it even worse. And if we don't take in the immigrants that we signed up to, we have to pay 20,000 per immigrant in fines to the EU.
Okay.
That's ridiculous. And Irish taxpayers are on the hook for that as well.
You've made a lot of claims about your party and given out about other parties. Well, with respect to them, they're elected and your party is not.
Well, John, the opportunity, there's an opportunity to for me to be elected on June 7th. I hope.
How many national party people are elected in the country at the moment?
None. And that's
who do you represent?
I represent the common people of Ireland. I represent the people. I represent the 75% in a recent opinion poll who said they're unhappy with current immigration policy.
And you think they're going to go your route about it, because the majority of people in this country are very pro-European.
I'm seeking to get elected to the European Parliament. If I was anti-European, I wouldn't be seeking to take an MEP seat. But I have a Eurosceptic approach. I think that we should put Irish people first and Irish interests first in Europe.
Would you like to see Ireland leaving the European Union?
We don't have to leave the European Union.
No,
I'll tell you what I'd like to see. I'd like to see a reformed European Union. I'd like to see, when we joined the European Economic Community originally, we joined a common market. I think that we should be going back to that. We should have a Europe of cooperating member states working together in harmony as a common trading bloc, and we can benefit from all that. Mm. But not just in migration. You see it in relation to agriculture.
Okay.
You see it in. Ireland is...
I'm looking at some of the principles of your party, the mm-hmm. National Party. And the first one, the National Party believes that the territory of Ireland consists of the whole island of Ireland, its islands and its territory seas. Are you against our constitution?
Not at all.
Are you against the Good Friday Agreement?
The Good Friday...
This is what your first principle
okay,
is.
The Good Friday...
It's in breach of the Good Friday Agreement.
I'll give you a straight question. The Good Friday...
And democratically, with the majority of people voting in favour of it on both sides of the border
and
on this
island.
And
the Good Friday Agreement, there was a citizenship referendum in 2004 where an anomaly was created because of the Good Friday Agreements that allowed... what was known as anchor babies, children born here to have automatic Irish citizenship. 79% of Irish citizens voted against that. Were they against the Good Friday Agreement? Everyone is in support of peace and reconciliation in Northern Ireland.
Okay.
Northern Ireland's situation is a very complex situation. We're all in favour of that. But mm-hmm. we're not in favour of... you're asking me about... I'm in favour
of... That's your first principle in the party.
Well, I think most people, never mind the principle of the party, most Irish people...
What do you mean, never mind the principle of the party? It's your first principle on your website.
Yeah, but most people would aspire to Irish unity and would like to see a united Ireland. But a united Ireland has to be brought about by consent. Okay. You have to. There's people up there that have a different perspective. And as I said to you, I am here... primarily to talk about my EU candidacy.
Yeah.
These
are all the topics that we're covering.
They're all the topics.
I know you have a big background in farming. What would you like to change if you go to Europe in terms of farming?
I want to give you an example. Yeah. The recent nature restoration law.
Yeah.
Five of the Fine Gael MEPs who sit with the European People's Party bloc, the European People's Party under the leadership of Manfred Werner from Germany, to be fair, voted against the nature restoration law, which provided for the forced flooding of drained farmland and peatlands in this country. Mm. And Fine Gael MEPs voted with the Communist group and with the Greens, against... their own group, their own party in the EPP. Mm. They're running as EPP candidates, but they have an a la carte approach in relation to the EPP. They vote against them when it suits. If I'm elected as an MEP, I will try my utmost to rescind the migration pact, rescind the EU Green Deal. Okay. I'm totally against and the nature restoration law, and put Irish interests first, put the interests of our agriculture, of rural communities, and of Irish people first.
All right.
And they have to be protected primarily. That's the responsibility of an MEP.
James Reynolds, the MEP candidate for Midlands North West for the National Party, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks. What are your thoughts? Get them into us this morning on 086-3833-553. You can phone Siobhan reception on 091-77-0077 and email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. Good morning.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway and get free 3-year warranty on hundreds of used cars.
Good morning, you're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley. There's a lovely initiative happening in the Clarenbridge Day Centre. They're hosting a Galway Tea event to mark 30 years of tea and kindness for Alzheimer's Tea Day. To discuss this, I'm joined on the line by Caroline Budge from the Clarenbridge Day Centre. Caroline, it's a lovely event that's happening there.
It is. Good morning. Yes, it is. We are having our 30th year of having tea days. And basically, it's to continue to raise awareness and valuable funds so that we can help support those living with dementia and their families and carers.
Yeah, talk to us about the work you do there at the Alzheimer's Day Centre in Cambridge.
Yes, well, the Alzheimer's Society of Ireland have a lot of different programs going on. So at the moment, we run a day centre in Clarenbridge in the Skull Sanctuary, and that's where we're having our tea day. And it provides respite to people living with a diagnosis of dementia. We offer dementia-specific care, and we have activities, and we do singing and dancing, and we have a great time. We also do reminiscence therapy, and this offers so much respite, needed respite for the family and the carer, and whether it's for them to go shopping or go for a coffee or even having a little rest, they know that their loved ones are safe and having a great time.
And this tea day, the events of it today, I know it's taking place between 2 and 4 at the centre, but it's to raise much needed funds for the services.
That's right. We're only part funded by the HSE. There aren't enough government funding for dementia services. So we need these funds in order to keep our services running. There are 64,000 people at the moment diagnosed with dementia, and that's set to double. And it puts so much strain on family and carers. So these funds are needed to keep these services going.
Absolutely. And the work you're doing there in Clarenbridge at the moment, it's very important for families and that their loved ones in that period of need, that they're being looked after. And I know you do a great job of it out there.
Yes, because it is dementia specific. So we're all trained in looking after people with dementia. We have wonderful carers and volunteers as well. And it is a dementia specific centre. And, you know, we do, it's a safe environment. We provide support, stimulation. We do reminiscence therapy. And, you know, we have some of our clients have said they'd come every day to our centre if they could. Others said they didn't realise how much they needed this. Because as people get older, and especially if they have memory problems, friends can tend to fall away. So this gives them a social outlet where they can be amongst people who have perhaps memory problems as well, and they have fun and they're safe.
Brilliant. And if people want to come down and support and donate, what's the best way of doing that, Caroline Budge, the manager of the centre?
Oh, well, they can come down to the Brothers of Charity grounds. We're in Bungalow 9, which is the Skull Sanctuary. And the Skull Sanctuary is a community development scheme. It's a registered charity and it provides space and support for community charities and community groups. So they're wonderful. They give us their centre. So it's on from 2 to 4, but we also have another social club running in Merview, and we're having a day centre there in the Cope building next to the church in Merview, and we're having a tea day there tomorrow 2 to 4 as well.
Brilliant. Well, the very
and
best
they,
to
people
look.
Can also go on to the Alzheimer's Society to donate.
Brilliant. Well, the very best of luck, Caroline Budge, the manager.
Thank you very
of
much.
Cambridge. Thank you for joining us on Go Away Talks.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
Still to come on the programme today, we have Galway Greats, and it's the turn of the wonderful Mary Bennett. She has a great story to tell, and she's great fun as well, so be tuning into that from 10 past 11. And as well as that, we'll have the sports review with Ollie Turner just approaching 11:45 as well. So that's what it's looking like for the rest of the programme today. A reminder, the Community Matters series, we're coming across Galway City and County this year to different towns and villages. And this Friday, the 3rd of May, is the turn of Clifton. And we'll be broadcasting from the Woodfield Hotel in Clifton. And I've already made contact with a lot of people who are getting on the show. If you want to get involved or if you want to nominate someone to be involved in our Community Matters programme from Clifton this Friday, phone reception right away on 091 770 77. Email comments at goaibayfm.ie, or you can even text into our text and WhatsApp number on 086 38 33 553, because it's going to be a great morning for all involved out in Clifton. We're really looking forward to already a great lineup there. We'll give you more details on that a little later on during the week as well. Now, just a reminder as well that each Thursday on Galway Talks at 11:30, I present Ours to Protect, highlighting how we can work together to protect the environment. And this week, I speak to Nicola Conley, the founder of Nunaya, about her regenerative business model. For more information, go over to galwaybayfm.ie, click on the Ours to Protect image on the homepage, and you could try out the ecological footprint calculator. And Ars Protect is brought to you by Galway Bay FM, the IBI, and is funded by Commission na Mban with the television licence fee. Check out arsprotect.ie for more information on that. Now, also a reminder that we'll also be having a lot of live music this week. On Tuesdays and Thursday mornings, we have music mornings between 11:45 and 12 midday. So tune in tomorrow for a bit of music. We have a great artist lined up there. But all that plus lots more coming up on Galway Talks today. A reminder, it's Mary Bennett. It's her turn from Treasure Chest. That's our Galway Great coming up after news and debt notices now. Good morning.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Find hundreds of used cars to suit your budget in Windsor Motor Mall Galway, located on the Monavay Road.